Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's show. I'm your host, Zach Drew.
And I am Josh Peck. How you doing?
I am doing well. Mr. Timothy Alberino, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Zach and Josh, for having me on. Looking forward to our discussion.
There are now reports coming from Mexico, Peru, and other nations that are revealing how they have recovered the bodies of aliens.
Our government has been, for decades, retrieving alien craft that has crashed in various parts of the United States and all around the world, and has been attempting to reverse engineer that technology with some degree of success. Alien abductions are a physical phenomenon, and they're subjected to not experiments, they're subjected to a very methodical, systematic procedure that is related to the production of human alien hybrids. I believe that the human species is inherently telepathic. I don't subscribe to the New Age whatsoever, but I do believe that there are certain capacities that the human species used to possess that we've lost because of genetic degeneration. Adam was a much more remarkable human being than we are. We are really crappy copies of Adam because of genetic degeneration. So I think Adam and Eve had incredible, remarkable capabilities that we've lost, including telepathy. And I think that some of those, let's call them psychic capabilities that were innate in the human species, are more active still, even though we're all broken down versions of Adam and Eve, are more active in certain family lines. And that would be because of it would be a genetic thing. So, and those family lines are preferred for abduction because it makes for a more facile abductee. In other words, part of the control of the Greys over the human species is a telepathic control. And so if you're interacting with human beings who are more susceptible to telepathic control, then it makes your job easier. Communicating with them, telepathically controlling them, installing into their minds the screen memories that block the real memories of the abduction episodes. That's why most abductees can't remember abduction episodes. So you are a much more practical individual to work with if your psychic capacity is more enhanced than other human beings. And that would be, again, that would be genetic. And if it is genetic, then that sort of confirms my theory that Adam and Eve were in possession of some of these remarkable capabilities and innately. So that would be one of the potential reasons why certain family lines are chosen for abduction. That their psychic capacities, their psychic capabilities are heightened, are more activated. Let's put it in a more accurate way, I think it would be more accurate to say that they're less degenerated in their psychic capabilities than the rest of us. And that makes them easier. It makes them facile abductees. It makes them easier to control. That is, and to communicate with. That is my theory. And the reason why, one of the reasons why I've come to this belief is because if you study the abduction material, you will discover that apparently the Greys are using psychics to identify new potential abductees.
Say that again?
That the Greys are utilizing psychics to identify potential abductees. And that comes from some of Carla Turner's material. A lot of psychics happen to be, I'm talking about your neighborhood psychic, you don't see a whole lot of them anymore, but by the way, I do not condone going to a psychic. In fact, especially in light of the abduction phenomenon, I would say stay clear away from psychics, but I do not condone trying to contact the dead and all of that. That's not the kind of, when I say innate psychic abilities, I'm not talking about witchcraft and contacting the dead and all of that. That's prohibited in the Bible. I'm talking about being able to communicate telepathically, having a much more powerful empathic connection with other human beings. That's what I'm talking about. And so you'll discover in the abduction material that a lot of your neighborhood psychics are abductees. and are being used to inadvertently.
Oh my goodness.
Inadvertently used. I mean, rather, they're being used directly by the Greys, but they have no knowledge of the fact that they're being used to identify other potential abductees. And it makes sense if the Greys are looking for people who are readily disposed or predisposed to psychic control.
Timothy, hundreds of thousands of abductions, you said. That's an army. Where are they? Are they walking amongst us? Is it Joe Biden? I mean, do they look like us? Do they talk like us? I mean, like.
Well, sure. I mean, abductees come from every walk of life. They're your neighbors. Like I said, it might be your doctor. It might be your congressman.
But the babies, where do those babies go?
Oh, the hybrids.
And are they walking amongst us?
I believe they are. I think that the purpose of the abduction program is to progenerate human alien hybrids for all intents and purposes indistinguishable from the rest of us.
So quite literally, just to make this a point, some of our sitting congressmen, I mean, we wouldn't have an idea of who these beings are that are partially human, partially not, correct?
No, I don't know how high up the echelon these hybrids have climbed in terms of, you know, if they're sitting members of Congress at this point. I would say that's probably unlikely. And the reason why I think that is because Dr. David Jacobs did a lot of good research into this topic. And he wrote a book. His last book was called Walking Among Us, which was his final published material in regard to the abduction phenomenon. And in that book, Jacob zeroes in on this, what he calls hybrids, human-alien hybrids, advanced human-alien hybrids. He calls them hybrids. And because he's been interfacing with thousands of abductees over his career. And again, his career wasn't an abduction researcher. His career was a history professor at Temple University. The abduction stuff was sort of his hobby. And he discovered that a lot of the abductees were being forced to interact with these advanced human alien hybrids. And their job, the abductees' job, was to introduce the hybrid into human society and to teach them how to operate, how to function in human society without looking too abnormal. So they were teaching them to, you know, how do you use a television? What do you do with a refrigerator? How do you go to Walmart and buy things? How do you check out? How do you check out at the grocery store? How do you, how do you operate in society to where you're not drawing attention to yourself? That's basically what was going on. And that was some years ago. I think that book was released in, I want to say, 2016. I'm looking at my bookshelf. I don't remember. It was some years ago. And so let's assume that that's true, that there are human alien hybrids walking among us, and that some of these abductees are having to sort of introduce them into human society and teach them the basics of living in society. Then it would seem unlikely then that those human alien hybrids who are learning how to use a refrigerator are now in Congress, or are now, you know, the presidents of universities or something like that.
Well, then again, everything you just described, how to function in society, how to walk, open a refrigerator, I mean, God, it just sounds like Joe Biden, but...
Touché.
Yeah.
Where do you see this go? I mean, it makes a lot of sense why the deep state or the dumb state, you know, don't want this out, but it is still getting out. I remember a few years ago, even before 2017, years ago, you predicted that if we ever get official disclosure, that it would likely be a slow or a soft disclosure. And we're certainly seeing that happen now. Do you think it'll continue like that? Like, what do you think the next few years look like in terms of disclosure and this information getting out? Maybe not to the extent of, you know, hybrids walking among us. Maybe that'll take longer to be public knowledge. But I mean, even just the existence of UFOs or now UAPs, where do you see the next few years taking us?
Well, I think that the next important step in disclosure as it pertains, we should back up and say that the Pentagon has a problem. And I'm using the Pentagon loosely, okay, because it's not just the Pentagon. It's the deep state in general and the dumb state. But the Pentagon has a problem. It cannot control the phenomenon. All it can do is control the narrative. So, and that's what they've been doing. The Pentagon has been feverishly attempting to stay in control of the narrative. So in regard to what this committee in Congress is attempting to achieve, let's be specific. I think that the next important step in their efforts to get to the bottom of especially the crash retrieval programs, we need whistleblowers from the programs themselves. We need these aerospace contractors who've actually put their hands on the technology, like Bob Lazar type individuals. We need those guys to come forward and to actually begin to describe what these projects are, what they have been recovering, what they have been attempting to achieve in regard to reverse engineering, and what they have in fact achieved. That's the next step. Certainly getting more guys from the intelligence community or from the military would be great, but what we really need now are these contractors to come forward. And if there's any contractors listening to us, I know that having talked to at least one member of the committee, these guys would be very aggressive in protecting any kind of whistleblowers who came forward. And so I think we're going to see that. I got a gut feeling that we're going to see it pretty soon. We're going to see somebody coming from, aside from maybe some military guys and some more intelligence community guys coming forward, we're going to see somebody from the contracting community, from the aerospace contracting community come forward. I think that's what we're going to see next. And when we see that, happen, now you have both private contractors and Navy guys, Navy pilots, intelligence officers. It's going to be very difficult to control the slow drip of disclosure at that point. It's going to start. It's like the faucet's going to open up a little bit more, and it's going to get really interesting really fast.
This has been an absolutely fascinating interview. I appreciate you coming on. I hope you'll come back.
Of course.
Let's wrap this up. This is the important question. Do you believe the alien question ties in with Bible prophecy? And how does it tie in with Bible prophecy?
Well, before we get to any kind of prophecy, I think we should just back up and discuss the biblical narrative. I think the operative question is, do extraterrestrials exist within the biblical paradigm? I think that's the base question that we need to answer.
Okay.
And I think we can answer that question by saying unequivocally, yes. Unequivocally. We know that in the book of Job, we read that the sons of God, the B'nai Elohim, shouted for joy when the foundations of the earth were laid. Just full stop right there. You have non-human intelligences, sentient beings, the sons of God, very powerful sentient beings who are shouting for joy, not just when mankind is created, but before that, when the foundations of the earth are being laid, whatever that means. So you have let's put it in these terms, you have an extraterrestrial presence that predates the existence of mankind. Unequivocally, in within the biblical paradigm. There's no argument there. Anyone who wants to make an argument, a case that that's not true, would have to do so outside of the pages of the Bible, because within the biblical text, there are clearly extraterrestrial beings interacting with the human species. Now, extraterrestrial simply means, and let's focus on sentient beings, not amoebas or something. Extraterrestrial, the definition means a being whose provenance, whose origin is not planet Earth. Mm-hmm. That's it. Whose origin is not Earth. Our origin is Earth. We were born here. We are Earth-born. So are the Nephilim, by the way. But we are Earth-born. Our origin is planet Earth. The origin of the angelic race, and I call them very specifically a race. I call them the elder race in my book because they're older than us, clearly, and they constitute a race. So the elder race, these angelic entities, are clearly not from the Earth. Their provenance, their origin is not planet Earth. Now, you can quibble about whether their origin is somewhere else within the physical universe or whether it's some sort of an extra dimensional realm or whatever, but it's irrelevant. They are, no matter how you slice this thing, these angelic beings are extraterrestrial. They're not from the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Again, true. I don't care if they're interdimensional or they're from Jupiter. Makes no difference. They are inescapably extraterrestrial. Okay. And I would add to that that they are clearly in possession of advanced technology. Clearly. Especially as it pertains to vehicles of conveyance. I would say, even more specifically, that within the biblical narrative, we have examples of these angelic extraterrestrial entities operating advanced aerospace vehicles, what we might call UFOs today. So when I said that earlier in this conversation that there's been an alien presence on planet Earth since the beginning, that's what I mean.
Mm.
And let's define alien. Alien is a little bit more complicated of a term, but I would define alien, this is certainly one of its definitions, especially in the context of this conversation, any sentient being that is not us is mm-hmm. alien to us, is alien to the human species. And to be specific, a non-human entity that has an extraterrestrial province is alien to the human species. So it is accurate to define these angelic entities as alien and extraterrestrial and or extraterrestrial. Now, I don't believe that I don't subscribe to ancient alien to the ancient alien hypothesis, to ancient astronaut theory. I don't subscribe to that. But I do believe that the basic premise of ancient astronaut theory is true, is biblically accurate, in that mankind has been interacting with extraterrestrial beings since his conception, since the beginning, since the beginning of human civilization, certainly, and furthermore has been influenced by extraterrestrial beings, good and bad. And so you have now a division, obviously, against operating within the biblical paradigm. If we talk about these angelic beings, by the way, the term angel is intentionally ambiguous in the Bible. But that's why I call them the elder race, because I'm trying to be a little bit more definitive. They're older than us. And this is a civilization, by the way. These aren't just ethereal, you know, non-physical things. This constitutes a civilization. There is an angelic civilization. In fact, I would say very, very confidently that the Bible, this angelic civilization, is described within the biblical narrative as the kingdom of heaven. There's a king, and that king has servants. There's judges, there's courtiers, there's couriers, there's a standing army. You know, one of the more prominent names for God, for Yahweh in the Old Testament is the Lord of armies, the Lord of hosts. And that word host has a militaristic connotation. It means armies. It can be translated as armies. So you have the Lord of armies. When I think it was Jesus, who the angel of the Lord appeared before Joshua, he appeared as a man of war with a sword. He was a warrior. And so, you know, the kingdom of heaven, Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven suffers violence and the violent take it by force. So here's a question, and we don't have to go down this rabbit hole. But this is a question that percolates in my brain. Does the kingdom of heaven have locality within our universe? And I would say it does. I think the universe was created for a purpose. I don't think that the universe was just created for one planet with a human species on. I think there's a whole lot of things going on out there. But the kingdom of heaven is not just a concept. It's a functional kingdom. In fact, earthly kingdoms are supposed to be modeled on the kingdom of heaven. That was the original intention. So the point is that, yes, there is a clear paradigm. The biblical paradigm does accommodate the existence of extraterrestrials. That the existence of extraterrestrials, furthermore, is presumed, not just accommodated within the paradigm, presumed within the paradigm. And I think that is a very logical and important, essential starting point for any Christian who's going to approach the UFO topic. We just, right out of the gates, we need to just accept that extraterrestrials exist. I mean, my God, it's crystal clear. And once I think a lot of Christians can get over that hump, then we can begin to digest some of the more surprising, shocking elements of an extraterrestrial presence, because we're not just talking about angelic beings. And again, I said good and bad. So you have this, again, this angelic civilization operating advanced technology. Clearly, that's clearly the case within the biblical narrative. And among this faction, and by the way, this particular faction, I believe we look like them. I think we're the younger sibling in this, that they're the older sibling, we're the younger sibling. I think that ties into the parable of the prodigal son. So when we're dealing with this faction, this angelic faction, we are interacting with, to simplify it, the good guys and the bad guys. And I would say on planet Earth, probably mostly the bad guys, because part of this faction is in a state of abject rebellion against the King of Heaven. So you have this insurrectionary faction that has broken off from the kingdom of heaven, that is at enmity and war with God, but nevertheless are still members of this civilization. In other words, these are, you have the faithful sons of God in heaven, and then you have the rebellious, the defected sons of God, the quote unquote fallen angels on earth and perhaps elsewhere. Both sides of that coin are in play in terms of interaction with the human species. So here's a question. Is it possible that some of the UFO activity that's been observed over the decades, and I would say over, as it pertains to this particular faction, the angelic faction, I would say over the millennia, is it possible that some of that UFO activity, some of those craft are being piloted by the good guys? In other words, i.e. by the angels, the good guys.
Oh, I've never even thought about that.
And that a lot of those craft are perhaps being piloted by the bad guys. Okay, so that's one faction. But then you have the grays in the mix, because clearly you have this faction, gray aliens. I think it's indisputable. In fact, Grush is moving in that direction. I think that's what he's going to reveal to the guys, to these congressmen, specifics about the grays. And so those are certainly the bodies that are being recovered in many of the crash retrievals of the gray aliens. And so you have other factions involved, not just the angelic faction. So it's a very complicated situation. It's a very complicated universe. And I don't think there's no breach whatsoever in regard to Christian doctrine here. None. There's no breach. The gospel of Christ is not at all altered by the existence of extraterrestrials. The existence of angels does not do damage to the gospel of Christ, and they're extraterrestrial beings. So why would the existence of other extraterrestrials do damage to the gospel of Christ? It doesn't at all. There's no conflict here. The conflict is imaginary. It's an imagined conflict. It doesn't actually exist. So I'm not so concerned. The question in my mind isn't, do these beings exist? Because I'm absolutely unequivocally certain that they do. My question would be, in regard to the allegiance of these beings in regard as it pertains to the kingdom of heaven and the king of heaven. So I think we as believers living in this age, we have an opportunity to mature and to advance in the way that we conceptualize the kingdom of heaven and the way that we conceptualize certain events that we read about in the Bible. And I think we should embrace the opportunity. And I think that we should not shirk from this topic. And we should understand that not only does the biblical paradigm accommodate extraterrestrials, UFOs, and the like, but it presumes their existence.
Mm. Timothy, I wish we could interview you for 5 straight hours.
We've done it before.
We have, actually. That's actually like 5 days in a row or something with Josh Peck.
Awesome. Birthright came out, we did this massive like 4-part series, and each part was something like like 3 hours. I think the whole series was over 8 hours.
Timothy,
that's right. Yeah.
Will you come back and do another interview with us sometime?
I certainly will.
Okay. Listen, audience, you heard it. I wanted him to agree on air so that we can go back and listen to him say it. Timothy, before we let you go, where can people pick up your book? And also, where can they follow you online?
You can get my book on Amazon. You can get it on, I think it's on BarnesandNoble.com. I think it's on Walmart.com. Okay. So you can get it on the major online vendors of books. What was the other question? Where can people find me online? Uh-huh. I have a YouTube channel, Timothy Alberino. My handle on social media, on Twitter and Instagram, is the same. It's just at Timothy Alberino. And I have a website, although my website needs some revamping. But I have a website, and you can sign up for my mailing list on my website if you really want to make sure that you don't miss any of the events that I do, or you know, anytime I publish a new video or something, I'll send out an email notification. So sign up for my mailing list.
Well, we are totally out of time. Once again, Timothy, thank you for being on today's program. It was fascinating. You're a fascinating individual. So thanks again, and I can't wait to have you back.
Well, it was my pleasure, and anytime.
We'll see you next week.